This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. A note for listeners, the next conversation is about sexual abuse, and it may not be appropriate for all ages. This week, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution was named a Pulitzer Prize finalist for its investigation of thousands of doctors across the country. Reporters discovered a disturbingly high number of medical professionals have sexually abused their patients with little or no repercussions. Ariel Hart and Danny Robbins were two of the reporters that worked on the series. Welcome back.
Hey.
Hello, Celeste.
Hello. It's good. We haven't had Ariel talking about this before. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
First, let's talk about how this, let's go back a little bit, Ariel, to how this all began and when you and other reporters began looking into allegations of sexual abuse in medical offices.
Well, this really grew out of Danny's work. He was looking at another doctor, and just out of an abundance of rigor, he requested records from the Georgia Medical Board on physicians. And he just noticed something odd, which was all of these doctors who had been disciplined for sexual misconduct seemed to be getting their licenses back. And so the paper decided to look into that further.
And what you found, Danny, was shocking, first of all, but the reporting in and of itself was difficult because of the nature of the abuse. I want to play this comment from David Klossy, who oversees SNAP. That's an advocacy group for people who have been sexually abused by priests and doctors and other figures of authority. He spoke with you and the rest of the AGC reporters for the series, and he's talking about how difficult it is to get victims to come forward.
I think if you haven't experienced sexual exploitation or violence, it's really hard to understand how and why it's so devastating. You know, there is no more deeply personal betrayal than this, because it's a betrayal on a physical and an emotional level and psychological level all at the same time.
How hard was it for you to get people to go on the record?
Some harder than others, but some were very willing to talk. The thing about this story, Celeste, is many of these people were victimized multiple times, first by a doctor and then by the system. The system would let them down because the doctor would remain in practice. And it was interesting, many of the people, a lot of these victims were sort of hidden away. We found them through the documents we looked at, and then we would approach them, and I was surprised at the number of victims who would say, well, he's in prison, or he's in jail, right? And then you would say, no, he's not. And many of them were willing to be forthcoming because they were so angry at the way the system had treated them after they had come forward.
And Ariel, this is one of the things we talked about before, how difficult it is actually to discipline doctors, because in many cases, as I understand, not only were the doctors not put in jail, but many of them retained their licenses, correct?
Many of them retained their licenses. And we will say, we may only know the tip of the iceberg of cases, because there's this vast infrastructure of secret, not even discipline, but secret dealing with this issue that has grown up with medical boards. And I think it's highly possible that the vast majority are now dealt with secret orders, so that if for the specific purpose of not endangering the practice of these doctors. But yes, the ones that we were able to look at, overall, half retained their licenses, and in Georgia, about two-thirds retained active
right.
licenses.
One of the doctors, one of the cases you talk about in the series is the case of Dr. Andrew Deakle of Cairo, Georgia, sentenced to 4 years in prison. So there's one who actually got sentenced. He was trading prescriptions for sexual favors, but he regained his license. One of the patients who testified at his trial was a woman named Cindy Sheridan.
To be abused by a husband and then turn around and be abused by my doctor, you know, it was a double whammy. This was like in a 5-year period. I would try so hard to detox at home so I wouldn't have to go to him. But I always ended up going back.
And I want to play this other comment. This is Kim Johnson, who was both a nurse and a patient of Andrew Deakle. And she defends him.
Dr. Deakle will be honest and he'll say, I did stupid stuff and I got in trouble. And, you know, that's how we learn. He didn't go out there looking for it. It came to him. Yes, that's where he crossed the line and he was wrong. But he paid his price. And he has proven to everyone in the community, to everyone here, he's here for good.
Why is it so difficult to remove a license of a doctor? Why is it so hard to take away a doctor's license or their access to patients if they have committed sexual assault or sexual abuse in the past?
Well, one thing, the context for that story, there's only a very small handful of states, and I think it's 4, 5, or 6, where a felony for sexual misconduct means you cannot practice medicine.
Right.
Georgia is one where that's not, does not prohibit it. It's all done on an ad hoc basis. So a doctor can go in there, make his case to other doctors, basically on the medical board, and you don't know. A lot of it's done behind closed doors in committees where, look, I'm in a small town. I want to help these people and make a case. But when you go back and look at a case like Dr. Deakle, there are people who feel like he's a great doctor in that small town. But someone like Cindy Sheridan is seriously addicted to drugs, and he used that to for sexual gratification. And the Georgia Bureau of Investigation did their investigation on him, found close to 400 photos of female patients in his office, nude photos of women who had posed in exchange for the drugs. So you have to, you look at both sides. But in answer to your question, doctors judging other doctors, not wanting to lose that someone who is in that profession,
and they don't want to set a precedent either.
It's deference. And another point is doctors have the ability to have the best lawyers, maybe more than other people, and then those lawyers will go in and negotiate with the medical board. It's a system with various pieces in it, but the ultimate end game is they continue to practice or lose their license and then come back.
And I would add to that the whole system is really set up on behalf of the doctors. The boards see themselves as the patient's advocate, but the way the system is set up really redounds to the benefit of the doctors. First of all, a lot of states, the doctors argue that their medical license is a property right. So that starts this whole legal parameter.
Not a privilege, but a right,
exactly. And you can see, like, in medical canons and medical ethics going back for centuries, the ability to practice medicine is always talked about as a privilege, but that's not what they argue when they go to court and they win. And so the patients are never given the ability to go into court and say, well, my right not to be violated is a right too, that that ought to counterbalance this. That kind of balance never happens. It's always the doctor versus the state. And the other thing is that the laws, you don't have this big infrastructure of patients' rights lobbies. You have a massive infrastructure of doctors' rights lobbies. You've got the American Medical Association, and then more importantly, the individual state medical associations that have well-paid lobbyists going in to battle for protections for doctors against patients, against accusations. And all of that creates a system where a doctor is really protected when they go in against a board.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Atlanta Journal-Constitution reporters Ariel Hart and Danny Robbins. They're part of the team that investigated medical doctors who were accused of sexual abuse, and that series was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. And I didn't say congratulations, so congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
We got straight into the nitty-gritty here. You guys spoke with William Allman. Dr. William Allman, about his past and the accusations of sexual misconduct that were made against him over the years. Here's just a portion of what he told you.
I enjoy being a physician. What I don't enjoy is feeling like I have to look over my shoulder because once you have one complaint, there's a target on your back. People looked into these things. It was investigated by all the authorities, and what happened. And I accepted that. And I have gone on. That's where I am right now.
So two things here. Danny, tell me about Dr. William Allman first, and then we'll get to why I'm not quite convinced that the past seems to follow these doctors around, because it seems like it's kind of difficult, actually, for patients to find out about this history. But tell me about his specific case.
Well, absolutely. These were three very, very different charges in three very different settings. He was... he left the military after he was accused of sexual misconduct with a patient. And then he, that was at Fort Gordon. And then he went to work part-time as the doctor at the Augusta Jail. He was again accused of sexual misconduct there. He was actually charged and arrested there. The charges ultimately were dropped, but there were issues about the exams he gave those women. So he was penalized again by the medical board. Then he came over to the Atlanta area and worked for WellStar in Paulding County. Again, women complained, and there he was charged again. He ultimately pled guilty to sexual battery. But one of the charges against him was actually involved a minor. And the medical board still did. Usually they'll take your license temporarily. In his case, they didn't. In each of the, but he was one of several doctors we found with multiple cases in multiple places with victims who never knew each other, who were still practicing medicine as they kind of went from place to place.
But one of the things that he describes here, Ariel, is this feeling like he's followed around by his past. But through your reporting, it sounds to me like it's actually quite difficult for a patient to find out.
It's incredibly difficult. And that's one of the things that really stuck out to us is that secrecy is used as leverage by the boards, by hospitals, by everyone who deals with these doctors. Look, just get off of our staff and we won't tell anyone. One hospital CEO said to me, he was talking about basically how proud he was at having gotten a doctor to leave who he knew was molesting patients. And he said to me, well, would you have left that grenade sitting in your house? And I said, no, but on no account would I have rolled it into my neighbor's house. And he had just never thought of it that way. Patients who want to find out about their doctors, I mean, I'm sorry, who among us ever thought, go on the medical board website for your state and look for the database of board orders. Even if you're that smart, you're not going to see the wealth of information that never makes it to a board order because there are secret orders, because a doctor successfully argues his case, because they negotiate the order down to the vaguest possible terms, because they can't even find it on the board website. And in the case of William Ahman, I mean, that was Danny's reporting, and he's got this, a massive amount of reporting on this guy with horrific detail, to the extent that I happened to run into a colleague of Dr. Ahman's at a conference, and she was livid that we were even looking into it, because she had no idea herself. She was a colleague of this guy. She had no idea what he had done.
And I would just emphasize, in his case and all the others that I looked at, with multiple victims, the victims never knew each other. In fact, in Dr. Ahman's case, the two that came forward at WellStar, one was a 40-year-old woman, one was a 16-year-old girl who had seen him on different occasions, had no clue who the others were until the very end. And we looked at another case at the University of Wisconsin Hospital with four women who came forward around the same time. No connection. The target may exist in some places, but in the cases we looked at, that was not what we saw.
I want to emphasize why it took the amount of dedication and resources on the AJC's part to look into this, because it is difficult to get this information. Here is Josh Riley. He's a detective with the Wilmington Police Department in Ohio. He handled a case of sexual abuse by a doctor, and he says in the end, well, let's let him describe it.
It's difficult when you have a physician and a patient in a room with no cameras, no nurses, no one else, and they do something of a sexual nature, say something, ask for something, or just flat out do something, and there's no witnesses and there's no way of proving it. You are down to he said, she said, she said, he said. How do we prove it?
How much is that made even more difficult by the fact that in addition to all of the normal difficulties of a sexual assault case, you have a doctor who's well-respected and then a patient who is often not?
And you have examinations where you're sitting there and vulnerable, and a male doctor and a female patient in a gown. And
they're supposed to touch you.
Yes. And and so many of the people we talked to, did this really happen to me? Is what you also heard. So it's a situation where they're set up like this. In the case that Josh Riley was talking about, a woman went back in with a tape recorder to get him to say some things. And even then, they weren't sure what they can do. This is a small town in Ohio. They ultimately had another woman read about the case in the paper, came forward and had DNA. But the reason we focused on that case was they said, look, we wouldn't have been able to do anything without this DNA because these were in closed door examinations. The women's word against a doctor who was a respected person in the community.
In the minute we have left, Ariel, is the reporting continuing?
The reporting is continuing. The really full-on effort, the main project, concluded at the end of the year. But as we continue to see impact from the project, we've been very gratified to see a few states really take the results to heart and try and do something within their legislatures. We're continuing to report on that.
That is Ariel Hart of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and we spoke with Danny Robbins as well, both reporters who are part of the team that investigated medical doctors who have been accused of sexual abuse. That series was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. So again, congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks so much to both of you.